Welcome. You are listening to Our Burning Questions, a professional learning podcast where we ask brilliant educators everything you've ever wondered about teaching English language learners. I'm your host, Liesl Koop. I'm an ENL teacher and resource specialist with the Mid-State Regional Bilingual Education Resource Network in Syracuse, New York. Thanks for joining us.
Okay, we're back for another episode. Welcome. We have very important questions that we're talking about today. Our burning questions for this episode are, what are best practices for supporting students with interrupted or inconsistent formal education, also known as SIFE, and what resources are available to educators who support SIFE? I'm really excited about the two people we have on the podcast today to talk about this topic. I have a co-host today and our special guest. Our co-host is Colette Ferrone-Goodwin, who I'll let introduce herself. And our special guest is Dr. Lisa Auslander. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Welcome to the episode. I'm going to start by asking Dr. Auslander if you'll introduce yourself. What is your title or your position for those who aren't familiar with your work?
Sure. So my title is Senior Project Director and Principal Investigator of a project called Bridges to Academic Success. We're in a NYSED-funded project targeted at the learning needs of students with interrupted and inconsistent schooling and newcomer English learners. I lead our team in school and district-wide efforts to provide professional learning for teachers of our students.
Awesome. And so obviously, I guess I could maybe make the assumption that one of your special areas of interest is supporting SIFE, students with interrupted formal education. Do you have any other special areas of interest?
Well, in general, my area of interest has been documenting best practices to serve English learners in SIFE in classrooms, but also collaborative practices that best support English learners in schools to create an environment of success. I've done some research on response to intervention and MTSS practices in schools and how do we best collaborate to serve English learners in a variety of ways. I particularly have had an emphasis on teacher-counselor collaboration.
Oh, that's really interesting. Maybe we'll get to talk a little bit about that today. Yeah. And what drew you to working with English language learners?
Well, I was a content area teacher for many years, and I found that the needs of English learners weren't addressed. I wasn't always addressing them fully, neither were my colleagues. I learned a lot from my English language teacher, ENL teacher that I worked with, but I was also concerned and saw that there was this larger issue in teacher education, that where there was a gap in teaching content and then language, and that this wasn't really addressed, and it's not a focus for content area teachers. I still think that's the case. This was true when I was a teacher, and in not many cases, not all cases, it's true today. So as a result, a lot of our English learners are underserved. And not only this, many English learners bring so many strengths to the classroom, which often remain untapped. This was my own experience. So it came out of my own experience of wanting to learn more and then a pathway of learning more about language acquisition and pursuing this when I eventually did a doctorate.
Wonderful. Thank you for sharing that. And now I'd like to introduce you to our co-host for this episode. Hi, Colette.
Hi, everyone. I'm very excited to be here. I'm Liesl's colleague at Mid-State Arbor, and my background is I'm an ENL teacher by trade as well. I've been teaching in the field of ENL for over 20 years. I've worked with adults, I've worked K through 12. So my special areas of focus are linguistics, world language, and childhood education, because I'm duly certified in New York State. And I have actually had the pleasure of attending the Bridges trainings over the last year or so. This is a subject that I've spent some time working on. So I'm excited to have this conversation.
I'm really glad that you get to be here as co-host and to ask all of our burning questions that I think a lot of people are gonna be really happy to hear answered, because there's a lot of questions around supporting SIFE. Colette, I'm also wondering, what drew you to working with ELLS?
I think it went way back to sixth grade when I started taking French. I studied French for 11 years throughout high school and college. And I was attracted to learning languages. And with that, I was attracted to learning about different cultures. And originally when I was in high school, I wanted to be an interpreter, but that didn't happen. And everybody kept saying, well, why don't you just teach English? And I was like, no, I don't want to do that. But the more I got to know, I got familiar. I actually went, I was a tutor as an ENL tutor for the Literacy Volunteers of New York, just to kind of figure out if that was what I really wanted to do. Mm. And that kind of sealed the deal for me. So that's how I ended up in the world of teaching English as a new language.
Awesome. And here we end up together on a team together, and yes, we get to speak to amazing guests like Dr. Mm-hmm. Auslander about things that are really interesting and pertinent to all the people in our region. I'm excited. Let's jump into our questions for today. So our first main question, what are best practices for supporting SIFE? And Colette, I'm going to have you take it away with some more specific questions. Oh no, is she frozen?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to continue with the questions until she gets unfrozen. The first question, Dr. Auslander, I would like to ask is, who are SIFE?
Right. So SIFE, as you said earlier, are students with interrupted or inconsistent formal education. If one thing I always emphasize, that we always emphasize on our team, is that they're an extremely heterogeneous group of students. They come from all over the world, from many cultures and linguistic backgrounds. More and more of our students in New York State are coming from Central and South America. We have many unaccompanied minors. And in the past, New York State used to have more refugee students, but fewer and fewer have come in recent years due to this current administration's policy. So, yet we still have so many students who come, and a lot of the work in serving SIFE in the classrooms is getting to know their needs and their strengths, and what we can learn about them, what we can leverage in the classroom to help support them.
Great, thank you. So we know that there's lots of programs in place to support English language learners. And SIFE is a unique group. And so what are some of the biggest misconceptions that you heard about SIFE students?
Yeah, it's interesting because I think many who don't know in SIFE, for example, one example I often give when we do training is many of the SIFE who take the NICETEL, which is that one of those entrance exams, are entering students who score a one. Yet SIFE have such a large range of language and literacy levels and abilities in their home language. And often as teachers, particularly if we don't speak their language, we don't have access to an understanding of what they already know and can do. And I think that's one of the biggest misconceptions that we're still working through as a community throughout the state to learn and to share, is to really unpack and sort out what they already know and are able to do. And the other thing is, SIFE have varied interests, just like many students, and strengths, and often life experiences, depending on their immigration status, on their family, on if they're working. They just bring a lot of varied life experiences to school, and often that goes untapped as well. So I think many misconceptions come from not knowing our students, from not always being able to fully communicate them if we don't speak their language initially, and to lacking the tools or maybe knowledge of the tools that we can use to learn more about them and leverage the strengths that they bring.
And it sounds like maybe there's this idea of SIFE just meaning this one kind of student, which obviously we know is not the case if we think about any group of kids, right? Even with L's who aren't SIFE, you can't just say L's, they're so different, just and SIFE are the same, so many different experiences.
Yeah, maybe I'll just add, for example, students who come to us to speak indigenous languages, if they are from Central and South America, there's so many indigenous languages. And, once there was a student in a school who were really amazing in serving their L's and their students in general, but he was crying at the counselor's office because people kept speaking Spanish to him and assuming that he spoke Spanish, and he just doesn't have a great grasp of Spanish. And they didn't realize that he had, he spoke Garifuna, an indigenous language of Honduras. So it's just an example of how even the all of us can get it wrong. It's a constant exploration and unpacking of getting to know our students.
Thank you. So you already kind of alluded to it already, but why do you feel there is a need for that specific designation of SIFE within the broader definition of English language learners?
Well, SIFE have the highest dropout rate of our Ls, at least in New York State, most likely in other states as well. There's still a lot of research that needs to be done to understand their numbers. But there's a specific need for designation because students who've had interrupted or inconsistent or limited schooling often need targeted language and academic supports in order to be successful in the U.S. schooling system and the demands and expectations we place in the schooling system. We serve adolescent newcomers, and often they haven't had exposure in all the years of primary school and middle school sometimes to be able to help inculcate them into the system. So they need these supports to familiarize them with the process, the routines of schooling in our culture, and it's often very different from the expectations they may have experienced at home. So a lot of it is helping them learn the expectations here and the differences. It's often cultural. Additionally, students need help in order to be able to access text as a resource to learn. These particular students or subset of SIFE students we call students with developing literacy or students with home language literacy at grade 3 and below or have more struggle transferring skills because they don't have them yet in home language either. And so these students may need additional support in foundational literacy, preferably in the home language if possible, as well as English. That's not always possible.
And I was also thinking about the fact that a lot of these students, they come and they're placed in high school where the academic demand is much, much higher and much greater at that level, which makes it all the more important, urgent for this to, for them to have that support.
Definitely. Yeah. So true. It's like, I think your choice of the word urgent is really real. Very true.
Yeah. So what do you feel that are some of the tools, what are some of the tools and practices that educators can use to correctly identify SIFE?
So NICET has an entire process of identifying Ls, which always comes first with in this process with the individual interview and the NICETEL. But once these are administered and there's a sufficient evidence that the student may have had an interruption or limitation in their schooling, then the multilingual screener is available. And that's offered in 16 languages in reading comprehension and in math. And that's coming out of a project also. I didn't know if I said, but I'm from CUNY. So I'm based out of CUNY, and my colleagues who work on the MLS are also based out of CUNY. So we partner together, both on the curriculum and the screeners. There's also a writing assessment that can be administered to gauge ability in writing in home language. And then teachers and administrators can triangulate these state assessments, but also classroom assessments, as well as transcripts from the home country when they're available, just to ensure students are appropriately placed or can begin to start identifying what kind of supports the students will need. And some districts have other more local assessments they've already developed. So we try to help bring districts together to share. Because often they may have local assessments that are useful. The Woodcock-Munoz comes to mind for Spanish literacy. So, a lot of it is really about triangulation, seeing the things that teachers see, but also teachers getting access to things like the multilingual screener in reading and math, and to be able to see where the student needs that additional support and where they can thrive in a more mainstream classroom with different supports.
I would like to just ask something that I get asked a lot as someone who supports teachers. Teachers are always asking, what counts as interruption when we're talking about a student with interrupted education? And how does the state and how do you on your team of educators determine what counts, and I'm using air quotes here, for a student to qualify as having had interrupted education or inconsistent education?
Right. Usually, I think the state definition is 2 years or below straight grade level in education. And the MLS helps determine the home language literacy levels to begin to see how much interruption the student might have. So that's the traditional way. And often we rely on families, though. You know, sometimes families don't want to say when a student, you know, sometimes it's harder to tell, particularly if they are able to do better on the exam, but maybe still have gaps in their education. Sometimes families are willing, if you can establish that rapport and that relationship with the family or a guardian, they may tell you and open up that the student did have limited schooling. You know, there are schools that more traditionally, culturally, students go for a half day. That's a little bit easier to figure out. It's like a culturally acceptable way of schooling, yet not often enough to bridge the gap for what students need here in the U.S. But sometimes families don't want to say because they perceive that if a student gets SIFE status, that they looked upon with a deficit, and that they're not going to move in the school or get the education they need. And a lot of that really relies on the school being able to explain, you know, the kinds of supports they offer, why they offer them, that it's actually not something that is a deficit at all. It's something, a status, to help identify ways to support the student have more success. So, you know, there's the traditional state definition that NYSED shares, and that's really important for schools to know, and that's part of CR Part 154. And then there's also kind of getting to know what the student's background is. And I don't know if I mentioned, as part of the identification process, there's also the oral interview, right? Where the questionnaire, where the student, the SIFE questionnaire, which I think is really great because it helps, you know, it has to be done by someone in home language. So it can be challenging sometimes to get the student's home language, particularly if they only speak, you know, a language that has an oral form and not a written form. So there are a lot of complications in some regions to get access to someone who can actually give that interview. But the SIFE questionnaire is really useful in getting background information, but that really relies on trust and building trust with the student, with the family, to kind of understand where they may have gaps in their education. Sometimes it's very clear, sometimes it's not, right? And I think that's why, you know, it can be a bit of a process in some cases for some students to figure out if they have indeed the limited schooling or not.
Thank you for that. And so just to reiterate for the listeners, there's no set, like, this kid has to have had missed 6 months or 2 years of school. It's more about their literacy and math skills. Is that accurate?
It is. It's more about the literacy and math skills as assessed on these screeners. So I think using CR Part 54 as the guideline is the beginning. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really important documentation for every school to know and be familiar with and know the NYSED determination and status. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely not, you know, you definitely have to go deeper than just the CR Part 54 definition.
Right, thank you. And for those who aren't familiar who are listening, CR Part 154, that's the regulations that we use to determine identification and placement and support of English language learners. Those are the laws that tell us how we support our students. And earlier, Dr. Auslander mentioned the MLS. I don't know if we told you what that is. That's the Multilingual Literacy Screener. Back to you, Colette.
So I was just thinking that I was just wanted to make a connection because Dr. Auslander, you had mentioned about, you know, building the trust with the families and you know, getting the information that you really need to support the students. And then connecting that with CR Part 154 and that very important need to have an interpreter present for the families when they come in, because that's, you know, that's your first connection right there and could be key in getting the important information that you might need to support the students. So I think we kind of already covered this, but let's just, you know, just for, just to kind of wrap things up, what is the difference between SIFE and SDL, Students with Developing Literacy?
SIFE have, like we described, limited or interrupted schooling. SIFE with developing literacy are students We kind of helped work with the state to coin this term because we focused a lot in the beginning of our project in particular on these students who CIFA developing literacy, and that those are the students who have home language literacy at third grade or below in their home language. These are the students that are the most vulnerable, I would say, because often they don't have foundational literacy skills in home language, and what we talked about earlier around home language transfer, they're not able to transfer those skills to the new language, and so they often struggle more. If they, in some cases, those students have had more interruptions in schooling or longer breaks in school, and so routines of schooling can also be challenging for them, and learning the routines and the expectations. So we created a sheltered curriculum and program for these students because they were so highest at risk. So that's the difference. Both have the same, it's the same designation. It's just we've chosen to kind of further differentiate among our students, especially because, as we talked about, CIFA's so varied, and even within Bridges, there are 3 or 4 variations of language and literacy levels alone. And then among CIFA, in general, more broadly, many more. So it's something you don't always think about. Our students have so many variations in their needs in terms of literacy and language, and just trying to unpack that was a lot when we first started this work, but we felt like that was really important to sort of helping our teachers and working with teachers to understand better the population and kind of dig into that a little bit more, to their identity.
Absolutely. And yeah, when you mentioned about the routines, the classroom routines, I immediately went to the curriculum and those routines and all those things that you have put in place, and the curriculum is just, it's amazing.
Thank you.
I hope that, and hopefully we'll get the information so that you can tell our listeners where they can go to check it out as well.
Definitely.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Colette.
All right, sure. So we kind of wanted to move into our next burning question, which was, what resources are available to educators who support CIFA? So we know that we've established that it's a very unique group and they need additional support. So what resources are out there and which ones are most effective to use when supporting CIFA?
Okay, so I'll give you first our resources and then maybe I can mention a few others that might be useful. So I talked about the shelter curriculum and program. So this is really targeted at those lower level CIFA students at third grade or below in home language who require and usually achieve more success through a shelter curriculum and can travel with a cohort for a year to target academic and socio-emotional needs. So that is primarily an ELA and ENL curriculum, but we also have units of math and science to support the sheltered students. And we recently developed an AHLA unit in Spanish that aligns with the themes, protocols, and strategies of the ELA and ENL units. So a lot of people have been excited about that because if they have a bilingual program in Spanish, they want to be able to have alignment in terms of the kinds of strategies that are being used and themes and being able to deepen and reinforce learning. So that's, we have been piloting that with a few schools and we hope to expand the HLA work in Spanish. And we're also planning a series of guided math lessons for next year to accelerate learning of foundational math skills, which is often, a lot of teachers we've interviewed have said that this is a huge obstacle for their CIFA learners in accelerating their math skills. And we have sort of math units that address some of the basic skills, but we've had a lot of success with guided reading and writing and group reading and writing targeted skills, both at the comprehension level and the foundational level. So helping students have more access to basic skills so they can accelerate further and have more success, particularly in the high school level. So that's one thing.
Dr. Auslander, can I just jump in for a second?
Sure, sure.
We've all been using the phrase sheltered program a lot, and a lot of our listeners actually have never worked with English language learners. Can you just describe what you mean when you talk about a sheltered program?
Yes, I mean, it can mean varied things, but for us it means sheltered means that the students travel in a group for one or more of their classes, depending on their skills and ability levels. so that they, I think it does two things. It helps the teacher target the needs, particularly when there's a larger, you know, anywhere from 4 to 6 to 15 students, you can target the needs of those students in both language and content, but specifically at language, at both the stretch text level. So in a way that they can start to access and be inculcated into the ELA classroom, learn what it means to be in an ELA classroom, having opportunities with enough scaffolding so that they can start to access text and be able to talk and discuss. And a lot of our students are thinkers. They want to have these conversations, but you have to give them sort of materials that will help them access the text because they're still figuring out how to use text as a resource to learn. The other advantage of the sheltered classroom, which again, kind of they're staying together as a cohort in that subject area for a year in our case, means that you have an opportunity to build their individual literacy levels by progress monitoring and supporting them in getting basic either foundational or comprehension skills and using things like running records to support that. So we do it from both sides of, different aspects of literacy. And then, you know, for some students, they don't need the ENL, ELA as much. They might need the math more. So perhaps they're sheltered in a different subject. There are very few schools who shelter students in multiple subject areas. As you all know, it can be a staffing issue, a licensure issue to really make that happen, especially if the numbers are small in some communities. So having a sheltered classroom can be fantastic. It can build that community. Also, from according to the students we've interviewed in the research, a lot of them really like the community building, the support they receive, the empathy from other students, and just building a collaborative environment can be really beneficial for our students to build a comfort and help them understand the routines of schools and get to know the school, the school's resources, the teachers, the expectations. So that's what we mean by sheltered, and many, you know, there's a lot of literature out there about it. But, you know, again, that it isn't always work for every school, right, to do that.
Right. Thank you for that clarification.
Sure, definitely. Okay.
So you've been referring to, you've been making reference to all of the professional learning that you've created.
Yes.
Under the umbrella of the Bridges to Academic Success program. So let's just talk a little bit more specific about this specific program. Could you just tell us maybe when did it begin?
Sure. So the trajectory of, like, we began in 2011 with my predecessor, Elaine Klein, and my staff, who are amazing and do amazing work, a few of which, most of whom were teachers in the classroom, who the curriculum developers were teachers themselves, worked deeply with the SIFE learners. And so saw the need and the gap in terms of our students who did not have access to text as a resource and really wanted to try to find a way to create a classroom environment where students could excel. And often our students would be the ones who said, I happen to work, like I was telling you, in a classroom that was more of an inclusion classroom. So I would have those students in my class as well. And they'll tell you, you know, they will tell you, like, I don't understand this. I'm having trouble with that. It's the mechanics sometimes of learning to read. The explicit instruction that they need support with, that often in a content area classroom, there's not the time, you know, to cover. And it sort of becomes, a place where the students can fall through the cracks, basically. I think this happens to a lot of students, actually. So it was my team really trying to find and having the luxury of time, not in the classroom, where they could really devote it to sitting down, working with expert reviewers, working with researchers, working with other districts, administrators, getting feedback. You know, all the curriculum we've created and all the professional learning that we create, we continue to get feedback on from teachers. We really value our educator friends, our Arburn friends, all of you. You know, we really know that the people in the field know best, but we have the time and space to create things, and we're good at creating things. So that's what my team started to do in 2011 in the DOE, and then eventually NYSED funded this curriculum that we offer. And then more recently, so this program is something we have a lot of resources for that I can share with you. We have an orientation to help people decide if they think it's the right fit for their school, for their students. And then we have a whole series of professional training that we offer throughout the year. We're doing it online now. And we also started to offer something more broadly for SIFE and newcomers, not just the quote SDL or students who are at the highest risk, but for all students, because many teachers don't have enough SIFE or SIFE with developing literacy to use a sheltered environment. They have students, their ENL teachers are co-teaching with their social studies teacher, their science teacher, and they need help now and resources now to figure out how to help those one or two students. So, in fact, today was our first day of sort of starting a course that we are offering more broadly in New York State. We're going to be offering again and again, hopefully. To really help, almost like an introductory program to helping SIFE and newcomers. We've adapted some curricular resources from our Bridges program that we were just discussing. We've adapted those to into kits that will help teachers, you know, with a few strategies, a few of the strategies that we found to be successful in the Bridges classroom and utilize them. And hopefully the ENL and content teacher will use them in collaboration and support the practices of the classroom. So that's our hope. That's where we want to go, because we understand that the sheltered environment is just one way. Yeah. And there have to be many, many pathways to helping students wherever they are, whatever context they're in.
This is really exciting.
I know. And for the people that aren't, that can't see, well, you can't see us because you're listening. The looks on Liesl's and my face has just lit up, and just a few minutes ago, we were very excited.
Yes, I mean, a lot of it, we know in your region that this is something that we've had a lot of feedback, and we knew that we have a manual that we've had out for 2 or 3 years that has the instructional protocols, but we knew that we need a professional learning that would do that. And it's not only for SIFE, but also newcomers. So it's a little broader. It can sort of be used in a broader way and adapted. And helping people learn to adapt is a big piece of what we're trying to do, and get to know the population of students they have. And everybody's context is different, so kind of giving people a framework for learning. And so that's another thing that we're doing. And I'll give you an example. So for example, we had created an expanded progress monitoring rubric in writing that both ENL and content teachers can use to monitor language development at the word, sentence, and essay level in their classroom. And I think it better recognizes and acknowledges student content knowledge in their home language, like if they're still trying to access the new language. So that could give a content area teacher insight into what the student can do and knows already. In their home language. It also differentiates more clearly between content knowledge and language development skills, which I found that got conflated often. Of course, we're not going to get rid of our Regents rubrics and all those tools, but it's sort of to help enrich and develop a broader range of teachers' understanding of SIFE learners. That's what we hope.
That's cool.
It's just a tool, but all of this are tools, and it's all how you put it together. So we're trying to give the tools. And the other thing we do is we have partner schools where we showcase our work, and we often invite teachers to partner with us. And I think that has been, we've had a lot of feedback that is a very strong source of professional learning for teachers, to be able to see how some of these strategies look in the classroom. So those are some examples that we provide. And I mean, there's abundance of resources on the NICED website. Also, we partnered a lot with the Center for Applied Linguistics. They helped us with that writing rubric. They have so many great resources, particularly for newcomers, but also for students with interrupted schooling. Coloring Colorado has some nice resources. And TESOL, I mean, of course, there are definitely other resources out there. So I hope that's a good beginning.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. And we will definitely get the information from you to link to where people can register for that course that you're offering.
Yes, definitely. Sure. That sounds great.
I think I see some more learning in my future.
Good.
You might
that's
see
great.
Me. So you talked a little bit about the teachers that you're getting feedback in the school district. Who specifically works on developing the curriculum that you've discussed?
So I have a team of staff members. Susanna McNamara, she's one of the founding curriculum developers. She was the director of curriculum when we were developing it. She's amazing. I have Virginia Skrella, who's an amazing PD facilitator, curriculum developer. We have Maria Rothman-Smith, who does a lot of coaching and school support for us and really works collaboratively with the team. We just hired someone else, Joanna. She works, she's very, many years coaching. She has made a lot of years experience coaching and working in TESOL. So she's an addition to our team. So we have a small team of coaches, professional developers who work together. Now that we created that curriculum, we're still, like I said, creating these resource kits to kind of help build on this curriculum. And but we're doing a lot more professional development and coaching. And my background, like I said, was a teacher, but also I was a district administrator, and I did a lot of school support and coaching. And so I'm very interested in us moving into the direction of really broadening our support and helping teachers in the field really feel supported. And sometimes people just need a few coaching sessions to help them get going. Often we like to partner with you, the Arburn administrators. You know your school so well, so often we'll create partnerships to work with schools where we might come for a few times and work with you and the teachers. So we've been moving a lot more in the direction of professional learning with the team and like honing our coaching model, which has been very exciting. Anyway, yes. No,
I was going to say, if that's something that someone who's listening is interested in, whether they're a teacher or an administrator, can they reach out to you and talk about that coaching potentially coming to their school?
Yes. We usually prioritize teachers who are involved in one of the programs, whether it be the SIFE newcomer program I just described or the Bridges shelter curriculum program. Mm-hmm. But definitely reach out. We can talk about possibilities, and we really look for lots of different ways to support teachers throughout the state. And I can give you the information of who to call. Our program assistant has been great, and her name's Clara, and she's been great in sort of advocating for teachers and supporting them and getting the supports they need.
Great. We'll definitely link to that info.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
Great.
So, is there specific research that your work is based on?
Well, originally we created the curriculum based on the research of Gita Mardarjando and Elaine Klein, who come out of CUNY and who really found this, discovered these issues and these gaps in the educational needs that were not being met for SIFE in classrooms. So they had done a couple of research articles for DOE. I think it was back in 2011. But we also look at the Nancy Clow's research on instructional strategies. Deborah Short has done a lot of research on newcomers. We've definitely looked at a lot of the literacy research to kind of think about how to create the curriculum. We looked a lot at the work around guided reading and foundational literacy skills. So it definitely came out of a lot of people at CUNY, but also well beyond, and kind of consulting some of the expert reviewers there. So language development has been a big piece of it, and also kind of in addition to sort of academic research, though, has really been around piloting materials and practices in schools and interviewing and observing to kind of understand what is working in the classroom and what isn't and why. That has been a real important part of us moving our work further. So we kind of started with this base of knowledge and understanding. And now, more recently, I helped lead a study of 5 schools. We did sort of a research study to understand how the curriculum was being implemented, and not only the best practices that come out of the curriculum, but what we saw and found evidence that teachers were doing to support SIFE learners, like what was successful and why. And it was a more of a exploratory study, but I think it really did help us understand better what was working well in the classroom and why, what conditions helped, create success for SIFE learners. So that's kind of that we kind of have definitely have the research base academically, but then also we've been doing a lot of work in the field to understand what it looks like in practice.
So the study that you were referring to, did that involve Brentwood in Newtown, where we did the intervisitation?
It did, yes, we have 5 schools. They're supposed, it's really anonymized, but they would probably be the ones to tell you okay. That they did participate.
Okay.
We anonymized it only to protect students, and particularly because we interviewed some of the students. But when you read it, you can't really tell who's from what school. So yeah, all the schools from New York State. And what I really like is they were all different kinds of schools. They were, you know, bilingual schools. We had multilingual schools. We had more of an inclusion setting. So we had many, many different kinds of settings, and all in New York State. So it's great because I feel really excited about that research and the book that came out of it, because I feel it really represents some of our teachers' voices. And we also were able to interview a very broad range of students in their home language to kind of understand their perspective, which I think sometimes when we did the lit review, it's missing from the research.
Right.
And so I'm very excited to have that out there in the world, just and I'm able to use that in PD to show what our teachers say, and what our students say, what our administrators say, and what their experiences are, as well as our observations from a research point of view of the schools. We obviously integrate that, but I think both are so important.
So you mentioned a book. So would you share the title of the book for us?
right. The title. this is the book. I'm going to show it to you. It's called Creative Responsive Classroom Communities, a Cross Case Study of Schools Serving Students with Interrupted Schooling. We published it last year. I use it sometimes. I mean, this course I'm doing now with my team, I use this book as a basis. And that's exciting to me because even today I had teachers, you know, reading other teachers' voices and students' voices. I love that. You know, when I was a teacher, someone interviewed me for their book. And because I worked with immigrant students, and they were trying to do a research study to understand immigrant learners in the classroom. And I felt really, I remember feeling like, you know, my voice was heard in some way and valued. And often I think teachers and sometimes students don't feel their voices are valued. And I think that's a real huge mistake and problem in our culture. And so for me, that's become a really important part of the work, is looking at documenting what our schools are doing, where they're thriving, where they're not, where they need support, and also their perspectives.
So where can our listeners find more information about the resources that you've been sharing with us?
Yeah, so our website, we have some things on the NICED website, and you can also go to our website. Most of our curriculum resources are housed on our website at bridges-scifeproject.com. And I can share all that information with you, as well as email addresses for those listeners who would like to access them.
Awesome. Yes.
So we've mentioned a lot of trainings. Would you recommend that educators be trained to use any of these Bridges products?
I think the introductory class is a great way to go. I mean, we're offering it now in the month of May, but we're going to have a sign up really soon for the fall. And depending on all of our circumstances right now, I know it's been a challenging time for everyone. We've tried to just adapt, and we've done everything online. We took a training that was originally an in-person training and just turned it into something online. And so we'll have that ready to be for sign up if people are interested to sign up in the fall. Whether we do it online or in person, we'll have something available for folks. So that would be a good entry point. It's also a great way if you're an ENL teacher, but you want your social studies teacher to come, or you want to encourage collaboration with another partner teacher who maybe has less experience with this population, and you want that, that is another way in. So that's what I would encourage to begin. If you have, it also, I think, would be beneficial for teachers who have a small, maybe two or three students who they want to serve, and they need a few materials that they can think about the design on their own. If you have a larger number of students at your school, maybe 4 to 6 or you know, for some of our districts, it can be in the hundreds of SIFE students, you can inquire about our Bridges shelter program. And we have orientations on those every month, and we can sign you up for that as well.
Yeah, I think that intro class is going to be really appealing to a lot of schools and teachers in our region, because we have so many schools that have 1 or 2 students who are definitely SIFE, and the teachers are really trying to figure out the best way to support them. So I think that's really going to appeal to them.
Oh, good. That's great. Well, you know, we learn a lot from the districts, and we know also from your region that is a struggle. And to be fair, in my experience, I would have two SIFE learners in my classroom. 1 SIFE learner, sometimes 3 SIFE learners, you know. Yeah. And we never had, in the schools I worked, we often didn't have the bandwidth for a shelter program. So I think it's an important need, and we understand that, you know, again, one size doesn't fit all. So.
So I'm curious, this, I kind of stems off of the fact that you mentioned you converted your in-person training to an online training. So I'm just wondering, like, how is that going? Because I know that a lot for a lot of our teachers, it is hard to find, you know, opportunities to get away, to travel. So I'm wondering if that might be a viable option for them in the future, even.
Yeah, I think so. I think we're finding that. I mean, I had a lot of experience in other roles that I've had in the past developing online courses. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, it never will replace an in-person experience. And clearly blended learning is best, maybe a bit of both. But it definitely, I think people are hungry for it and want that experience and just want to keep learning. And so we do try as best we can to create community in the online course. So for example, in this course, we have a lot of interactive breakout groups and things like that. And, you know, we have people, we, you know, allow people to share their information, their email addresses, if they want to create a PLC. I think it's really important in this time that we try to create community any way we can, because people need support. So agreed, have to make it work. And I think people have let us know, like in the beginning, we weren't sure if what people wanted. We really surveyed a lot of teachers and administrators, but a lot of them said, no, we want the online learning. Yeah. So, yeah. You know, we're going to adapt and make it happen. And we'll have probably both in the fall. I mean, probably in the fall, for all we know, we might still be all online. So we have to see. We'll adapt.
Yeah. Awesome. So based on this conversation, you know, in the current situation that we're in, are you able to share about some of what you heard from the field about the challenges of many of our students as a result of this pandemic?
Yeah, I mean, again, I'll just say, you know, as a disclaimer of sorts, that not every, you know, we have so many different kinds of students, it's kind of hard to generalize. But I will say that it's been challenging for our students. A lot of the students, you know, particularly those who are undocumented, who may have been working and lost their job, or their families lost their job, may not have income. We have a lot of students who, even though they, you know, especially if there wasn't online learning already present, may not be able to access the online learning environment, or didn't have the training initially, or don't have Wi-Fi or any kind of way of accessing online learning in their home, you know. And these are the challenges, and why, you know, I think we're all really concerned about the fall and moving forward, because our students are going to be the ones who experience large gaps in their learning, and we want to make sure that they get the support they need. A lot of it has been so social emotional learning needs, and helping teachers think about how they can support their students in a one-on-one way or in small groups. And there's been a lot of our teachers reaching out to their students to try to help them and just connect with them and make sure they feel supported. So it's definitely a challenging time, you know, for many of our students. And what we try to do, based on what teachers told us, we created a lot of online curriculum resources that I can share with you also, that anyone can use. You don't have to have a Bridges classroom, or we just created kind of an open source library on our website of things that people could pick up and integrate into their lesson plans. So that ranges anywhere from like phonics kind of and sight word practice, to book our staff reading aloud books, so students can have the audio and the visual to see and experience, and other like activities that they can participate in that, again, teachers can integrate into their own lessons that they're trying to do. And also to kind of maybe engage students and help them feel they can access it online, because as we know, language can be a barrier.
Right.
In addition to all the other things I just described. So right. I think just trying to build that awareness. Our teachers are brilliant, compassionate people, the ones that have been working with us. So we learned a lot from them, but that's what we've tried to do in response. So it's a challenging time for our families and for the students we serve. And I think it's just moving forward, we're going to have to be very diligent in trying to understand what the needs are. And I think it's going to be, again, like we talked about throughout this conversation, it's just going to be different for every community. And the SIFE learners in our community are going to have different needs. And so trying to tap into those and figure out what they need and how to best support them in the next phase of this pandemic we're in.
I think it feels like, you know, as a teacher who's trained to work with English language learners, even for me, working with SIFE can be intimidating because I'm not always 100% sure what to do with my students. But I actually feel really encouraged and bolstered by this conversation because I feel like the number one thing that we need to do for all kids, really, including our SIFE, is know them. We just need to know them. And if they are SIFE, then there's all these resources right here that you talked about that can help us, and we can just pick out the things and start integrating things a little bit at a time that will help us better identify our students, better understand their needs, and better support those needs, which to me actually feels like, okay, I got this. I can do this.
That's awesome, Liesl. I really means a lot. I think that's so true. And I think a lot of people are afraid. They don't feel they know what to do. I was a teacher who didn't know what to do. And you just have to be open to learning. And I think we have to help teachers accept wherever they are, whether they're vastly experienced and have a lot of resources but want to learn more. And for those who are new to working with this population of students who want to learn more, I think it's just important to feel like, of course you can. We can demystify this. We can get through this together. And we can find ways to support all of our students. So thank you for that.
Yeah. Colette, do you have any other questions you'd like to ask?
One of the things that comes up, and we've kind of addressed it sort of, but we get a lot of questions of like, how can I support my students if I don't speak their language, and how can I help them use their home language to build their own literacy if I don't understand what they're saying?
Yeah.
How do you respond to that?
I think we have a lot of activities where we kind of put people in the experiential feeling of what it's like to be in a situation where you don't know the language, mm-hmm. and to help build, first of all, it's building the empathy, and it's helping teachers plan both the input and how they're helping with the comprehensible input, how they're delivering the instruction in a variety of different ways. If they're a content teacher, how they're working with the ENL teacher to make that input comprehensible. And when things can be in home language, this is challenging in multilingual schools, but in places where there are home language supports, that's always beneficial. We have a lot of examples of the ways you can transform the physical environment into a place that students can start to access language and literacy. So the physical environment can also be a way to help ground students in accessing the routines in their home language, in simple language, in visuals. Visuals are huge and a huge piece of how we can support our students. There are ways that I really think doing it alone is a problem. I think wherever possible, like if you have a colleague who does speak the language, creating opportunities, not only where you can speak with them to the student, but where you collaborate with that teacher or that professional. Sometimes it's a paraprofessional or someone else in the school who just can build that rapport. And finding small ways to build the rapport, I think is really important. It's like Liesl was saying earlier, I think students can sense when you care, when you create opportunities for them in the classroom to create safety. I think routines are another way that you can help if you don't know the language. Teaching students routines through visuals, hand gestures, using students that do speak their language to help support them in the process. So there are a lot of ways. That's what we focus a lot on the trainings as well, is trying to build in supports for teachers so they feel more confident, even if they don't speak the language, so that they can start to build those relationships and build those instructional routines that will help the students feel safe and that they can start to take risks, right? So it's not like a one-stop shop of solutions, but I definitely think there are a lot of different strategies you can use both on your own and in collaboration with others to feel more confident in how you're supporting students. Also, our team, my team member on the MLS, has some great resources to help, which I wish I had had when I was teaching in the classroom, which are resources to teach teachers some basic principles and grammar about other languages to get them to understand what the common misconceptions are of, like, I think she has it in Spanish and Arabic, maybe one other language. That can be really useful to learn a little bit about their language. We also have an activity in our course, which is a little bit different. It's more about how do you appreciate, learn to appreciate each other's languages, where students teach each other about their language, because there, you know, we had some classrooms where there was teasing and bullying. And so how do you like create a community where people respect, the students respect each other's languages? So I think there's a lot of different entry points depending on the context, but it's a great question. And there's, and it's a really important one. And it's sort of like has to be sort of at the forefront. I hope that gives a few strategies.
Yeah, and I was also thinking that, you know, a lot of times as teachers, we feel we need to assess, you know, we need to do those formative assessments. And if they're using their home language and they don't speak the language, how do you do that? So, and I think you kind of touched on that, you know, with the support with the visuals and the routines and just, you know, finding other ways to demonstrate the knowledge.
Yeah, exactly.
I think you really, like, the linguistic nerd part of you really loved that whole topic right there, Colette.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You're like, yes, all this metalinguistic stuff. That sounds awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
It's great.
Awesome. Dr. Auslander, thank you so much for joining us today to have this conversation about our SIFE students and supporting this really diverse group of kids who deserves to have access to the best possible education. And thank you for being part of a team that's creating something that's making that possible for them.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me with you today.
It's been a pleasure to speak with you.
Yeah, and Colette, thank you for co-hosting with me.
Oh, it's my distinct pleasure.
I hope that you'll come back again.
I would love to.
Wonderful, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening today. If you would like to learn more about the brilliant guests we had on today's episode or any of the resources we discussed, please find those on our webpage. This podcast is produced by Midstate Arburn at OCM BOCES, and our theme music is Sunbeam from Purple Planet Music. We hope that you'll tune in next time for more of Our Burning Questions.